Whoa. What'd you dig up there, Jay?
HeroQuest!
Alright!
Badass!
This out, Jay. I have such fond memories of holding this box. High adventure in a world of magic. Are you ready to embark?
I'm ready. I lived in that box for about 6 months.
The dimensions of this box are only like, you know, 2 feet long by maybe a foot and a half.
It's pretty much standard board game size box, I think.
Yeah. Check out the art on this. For a board game, this has some pretty intricate art. It's got a little everything on here. It's definitely gives you the feeling of that it's going to be a high adventure. The HeroQuest game system, it says.
It's almost like a Frank Frazetta. It's just like awesome barbarians swinging a sword, goblins jumping around. There's a dwarf back there. He's ready to. There's so much kinetic action going on in this scene.
This guy in the middle, the primary focus of the picture is this barbarian. In the dead center of the box, it kind of, if you look at the look on his face and the way he's positioned, what does that look like to you? What's it look like he might be doing there?
It looks like he just took a hit.
I was thinking something that rhymes with that. It looks kind of like he's just taking a shit.
I think maybe like a giant bat swooped up underneath his loincloth and bit him on the nut.
Look at his asshole back here in the back.
He's like, oh, hell, you didn't.
No, he's just... No, that's the mummy. The mummy's definitely got the diva face on. It must not have eaten in a while. This guy right here with this big fucking shit-eating grin.
Oh, yeah, that, like, freaking troll-looking thing in the back.
He's just like, I'm here, too.
So, like, what's up?
Yeah, this box art is definitely a huge step up from fucking Monopoly in the Game of Life.
The freaking dwarf, he's about to cleave something in it. Like, I want to see the picture that happens in about 3/4 of a second from now. Because that dwarf, like, that thing's about to swing, and that guy's not going to be in one piece anymore.
Yeah, that dwarf is going to be
That thing is
fucked.
Down by his ankle. He is, like, arms back. Dwarves are always ready to fuck shit up.
On the back, you get this great picture of some kids playing, and it's got a nice isometric view of the board all set up. We'll talk about that, but yeah, this exact picture right here reminds me so much of the first time I ever heard about HeroQuest on the commercial. That commercial was fucking awesome, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It's exactly... Imagine the scene on the front of the HeroQuest box. It come to life. You've got that creepy goblin swinging around on the pole. You've got people casting spells. When you see this as a child, you're just like, I don't know what that is, but buy it for me.
And then you get this just awesome narration.
Yeah, very, very epic. Like, this guy must have been the best dungeon master ever back in the 70s. It's such a cool commercial. It does exactly what a commercial in the 80s was supposed to do. It was supposed to sell this to your kids. And this is enough to make me ask for it, and eventually I did receive it for Christmas. I'll tell you a little story about that in a little bit. But yeah, that commercial, that was pretty bomb. It was pretty bomb. It was hype.
There were some epic commercials back in the day. Like, I remember Street Fighter crushing Mortal Kombat, and Eternal Champions had to one-up them, and then you had HeroQuest.
Yeah. There was a lot of great commercials back then. I mean, now that you mention it, I remember the Game Gear commercial where they had that really big dumb guy sitting on the bench, and he's playing a Game Boy. I don't know how they got away with this back in the 90s. It was just blatantly showing your competitor's product there's nothing else that looks like a Game Boy except for a Game Boy. And he wants to see color, so he picks up this dead squirrel off the side and bonks himself in the head and goes, "Ooh, color," and he sees these psychedelic colors. You'd never be able to get away with that nowadays.
Commercials were awesome in the day. Even cereal mascots, so many of them were just like, just violent, just for the sake of selling their product. Do you remember Sugar Bear? Yeah. He was like the cereal pimp bear. He would just like punch you if you had his cereal. They don't do that anymore.
No, you can't get away with smacking people up. The thing I remember most about this commercial was there was a lot of commercials in the 80s, especially for video games, where, you know, things didn't really represent what you're actually getting in the end result, so it was very hyped up. But this commercial actually had a good shot of the game set up and some kids actually playing it, and it didn't turn me off at all. It definitely made me want it even more, because you see what this game looks like. You have to understand that back then, in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s, when this game was popular, the concept was foreign to a lot of us kids. If you didn't hang out with a particular crowd, was a sort of a stepping stone.
I didn't even really know what D&D was until I was probably like in my mid-teens. And, you know, I mean, this is like, you know, the board game version of it.
Give me that nerd card. Just give it to me.
You
can have it back after class.
We had like 10 channels, and none of them were telling me what D&D was.
I guess you're correct. We didn't have that cool show Nightmare in the UK had with that Shakespearean actor that plays the dungeon master and makes those poor kids run off to almost certain broken leg situations. Wow, we've gotten off topic. But HeroQuest, that's a game we dug up in the basement today, one we used to play a lot. Let's go to the stats.
HeroQuest. Deep inside another dimension, face battling barbarians and evil magic on a quest for adventure in a maze of monsters. This is HeroQuest, the fantasy adventure game where winning means mastering the arts of combat.
I'll use my broadsword.
And magic.
Fire of wrath.
Discover traps and enemies. Uncover secret doors. Once you get into it, you'll never be the same. HeroQuest.
The HeroQuest game system was released in 1989 by Milton Bradley, and it was designed by Steve Baker. Now, this guy, I had to look it up. I had to go and do some research, and apparently he'd done other adventure board games like Battle Masters and Space Crusade. Some of them got really popular, but I've never played them. Have you ever played any of these games?
I have heard of them. I think a lot of people still play Battlemaster, but I have never actually, I don't think I've played a Steve Baker game before this.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever played really any of his other games.
I mean, I don't know, is Warhammer Quest one of his?
Because I don't believe so. I think, well, here's what, a little interesting story about Steve Baker. I did a little bit of research, and there's not a lot. I mean, there's a link on Wikipedia from the HeroQuest page to Steve Baker, but it says, it's one of those things where it says, you know, help us improve Wikipedia and talk about Stephen Baker. I don't know anything about Stephen Baker. That's why I'm asking you Wikipedia. There's nothing on Wikipedia. I did find his LinkedIn page, where he actually was nice enough and to chronicle his entire career. So he's still working for Hasbro, who, I don't know, did they buy up Milton Bradley or
I
something?
I think they did.
I think they did, too, because it lists him as Hasbro and it has the Hasbro, but it goes all the way back. So he got his start. He's still doing like a lot of clerical stuff and administrative stuff. He doesn't really make games anymore, but he actually got his start at the primary store for supply in London, in the UK, Games Workshop. He was like just a manager of a gaming store, a Games Workshop store, in the primary one in London, and then they brought him on to make this game. So this is in the really, really early 80s, I guess, he was managing this. I didn't know they had gaming stores back in the early 80s.
Oh, they did in UK. A lot of that stuff came over from there.
You mean like, so you think it would be more like strategy games and role-playing?
From what I understand, it was a lot of war simulations, like literal historical battle simulations which, like, spawned, hey, what would happen if these guys were characters from, like, Tolkien?
Right, and so we have Dungeons & Dragons.
Well, then you would have a fantasy strategy game, and then that gave birth to, hey, what do these guys do in between fights? And that's what would eventually become Chainmail, which would eventually become D&D.
Yeah, so I guess in the early 80s, you would already have D&D out, so they were probably somewhere between the wargaming and the role-playing. So, yeah, I guess there was the large market for that in London, and I can only imagine. I've managed retail stores, you know, in my life at different times, and I can only imagine going from that, like, say, okay, so I managed at Petco for a little while. Like, does that mean I'll rise up the ranks to invent the next...
Invent the next pet?
Invent the next pet? Like, genetically engineer a new guinea pig? Fucking gerbils and coconut-sprinkled hamsters or whatever they have now?
Like a worm, but it's furry like a ferret. A ferret worm.
I don't know how I feel about that. I'm not a big fan of worms. But either way, Steve Baker, he had invented this game and some others, and still works for the company to this day in 2016. So HeroQuest is a game. It's an adventure game, and it's 1 to 5 players, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. The rating on this one, if you have children, 10 and up, please. I don't think it's because of the theme or any kind of real violence. I think it might be just because the rules are a little bit more complex, so that it might... Although I think an 8-year-old, maybe
back in 91, they really didn't care about the violence that much.
Yeah, you're right. So I think that must have something to do with they suggest it because the rules are more advanced in Life or Monopoly. And then I guess the average playtime for this is about 90 minutes. I'd have to agree. It's about right for...
It depends on like what quest you're on and how versed you are in the system.
Yeah,
if you've played it a lot, you can probably bang it out in half the time, but...
Yeah, I could see that. This is the kind of game where you'd come up with a lot of shortcuts and things like that to make it a little faster as well, rather than playing strictly by the step-by-step rules. But yeah, I remember being... I want to say it only took about an hour, really, usually, to play through. But here's the thing. This is the kind of game I think might take longer with more players. Like, if you are just playing it with 2 players, it's going to go a lot faster because one person is going to make all the decisions on one side.
Yeah, if you have to talk it out and figure out which way to go with 4 players, it's definitely going to take longer.
Because I honestly think if you're playing with 2 players, I think you can probably bang out a quest in about 45 minutes. And I could see that definitely extending to about an hour and a half with a full host of 5 players. So remember that if you're going to play Hero Quest on your game night this week... And kind of recommend that you do. I guess set aside yourself an accordion amount of time between 45 minutes and about an hour and a half, 2 hours, depending on how many people. And if you've never played it before, I definitely recommend reading the lengthy manual that comes with it first. Otherwise, you're going to have a bad time.
Well, if you've played other adventure games before, it's pretty old hat.
But if you haven't, then you're going to have to beef up on this, because this is no back of the... You know, when you open this cardboard box, you don't just see, oh, here's the rules inside. You know what's inside of this, the lid of this cardboard box where the rules for the game would usually be in an American board game? Instructions on how to put furniture together. It's like IKEA. It's like IKEA in here.
You know, that was one of the great things about the game, is it's got all this great cardboard and plastic furniture. And you only have to assemble it once, really. Then you can just, like, you know, put it together assembled. But everything is, like, you've got, like, a torture rack and a throne and tables and bookcases. And you can decorate things with little skulls and rats. It's just it's an incredible experience in itself. There's a fireplace that's just a piece of plastic as a base. And then a piece of cardboard that you fold to just give it the right angles and plug into the base. And, boom, you have a fireplace.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
That was one of the things that set this aside from a lot of the other adventure games that were coming out in the same era, because a lot of them were just like, here's a board, here's some tiles to represent things, and you might get a couple plastic minis for your heroes going through. This was like, every character, every monster was a plastic mini. Every room you went into had plastic and cardboard furniture that's like full color, just standing up, and it really popped.
Yeah. I think that's kind of what attracted me to it. I mean, just to go back, we'll talk about how we discovered HeroQuest. For me, it was seeing the commercial. Definitely that badass commercial got a boy my age, probably 9 or 10, amped. I mean, there are heroes swinging swords around and lightning bolts, and just seeing that, I'm like, wow, it's almost like they're playing a video game, but it's 3D and coming off their table. I didn't know what I was even looking at first, so... that was my first kind of brush with it, but then, and that was, I think, my last year of elementary school. It was probably a year before I met you, Jay, because we went to different elementary schools, although Jay and I did end up going to the same middle school. Yeah, there's a guy that we both know. Remember Earl? I'm not going to say his last name.
You know what? Earl's still around.
Huh.
Yeah.
But I remember he and I used to pal around because we were into the same kind of stuff, video games and things like that, and he came up with this Quest book. And he and a couple other kids were, I guess, doing some quest creating, and I'm like, I don't know what they're talking about. And he kind of showed it to me. He's like, hey, do you want to make a quest for us to play? Because I want people to be creative with me. I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't know what this is. He's like, it's HeroQuest. And I was like, is that thing I keep seeing on TV? And I knew I wanted it. So I begged my mom for it, and I did get it at Christmas in December. Come to find out that, for reasons we'll talk about when we tell you how to play this game just a little bit, I couldn't play it. I'm the only child.
You could play it.
Not at 10 years old. But here's the... So I played things with it. I remember I got into chess really big, and so I took the pieces from this game and made a chessboard like out of paper and shaded in the black squares and taped it inside of a Trapper Keeper and then put all of... the figures from HeroQuest that correspond to the chess pieces in this little, like, rental video case. You know those plastic clear cases they used to put, like, right. Nintendo games in and Sega games? I'd whip that board out and be like, I got a chess board right here. It's Hero Chest.
I actually went a different direction with that. And I hadn't heard about battle games at the time, but for disclaimer purposes, HeroQuest is strongly linked to Warhammer Quest. If you played HeroQuest, I recommend Warhammer Quest because it's just a little more in-depth. It's modular. It's just got a lot of cool stuff. Warhammer Quest itself also related to Warhammer, which is a fantasy strategy battle game where you march your armies out onto the field and then they fight. I ended up at one point just seeing, oh, you know, let's take all the undead monsters and let's take all the goblin orc monsters and let's put them at opposite ends of the board, ignore the walls, and just pretend that there's a melee going on and just see who wins. And just have them just run at each other and clash. Oh,
that's not a bad idea.
Oh, that was fun.
How did you find the game?
I think I also saw the commercial. I'm pretty sure. I do remember seeing it at Walmart, back when Walmart was new in our area. And this was when Walmart had, like, just a towering aisle of toys, where they'd have the top shelf and just stuff stacked up so high no human person could ever reach mm-hmm. it without a ladder. And that was in there, and I just saw the cover and just drooled and drooled until I saved my allowance up for a couple weeks or a month.
Wow, you done earned it yourself?
Yeah.
How much was this game, do you remember?
I do not remember, but it was fairly affordable compared to a lot of games. I would say it was probably around maybe $15 or $20 tops.
I was thinking it was more around like $30 to $40, which is still pretty affordable, honestly, considering everything you get.
Compared to a lot of the games you get these days that are actually starting to top out over $100, I believe the newest Warhammer Quest came out at about $125 last month.
Wow.
Which is a big investment for a, if you haven't played the game and you're not sure if you're going to like it.
Ignore my typing here. I'm just looking to see what...
Research and development.
Yeah.
But I got the game, and I remember that there was a... I remember that summer, I think it was 92, it was... That summer was HeroQuest and Superman, because that was right when Superman was dying and coming back from the death, if you remember that. It was a big comic story.
Yeah, cool Sega game, I think, based on that, the Superman. That's I always associate the death and return of Superman with a... The Death and Return of Superman game, which wasn't terrible.
Except that it took Superman like 5 minutes to knock out your average street thug.
I liked it. It was better than that Hulk game that you used to like all the time. I can't figure out how much this was. I want to say it was probably about anywhere between like $20 to $40, somewhere in that range, depending on if you got it on sale or not, or how long after release, because I'm sure they dropped in price after a little while. Being that this isn't one of the, this is before board gaming really became sort of a business of itself. I'd never played D&D or any sort of strategic. I mean, I was only, when this came out in 89, I was 9 years old. And being an only child, I wasn't exposed to, like, you know, older brothers that went out to the basement to play some Dungeons and Dragons. But the idea of it appealed to me because I love video games and I loved adventuring. So this idea did call out to me.
I had two older brothers, so we had, you know, Monopoly and Risk and Battleship, but most of those were just way too complex for me to really understand. But this was just like, this
Battleship was too complex?
Well, I mean, to strategize. My brothers were like 7 and 10 years older than me, so, you know, they would just like beat me senselessly every time. But this was like, and this isn't even competitive. This isn't, you go in and, oh, here's, I'm going to be the barbarian, and I'm going to be better than the elf. No, this is cooperative, which was like a really different concept at the time. You have to team up with the people you would normally like be competing with to get through the adventure. The only real competition, they kind of play it up as if there's competition against the GM, but that's really not the point. You know, the GM is the storyteller that leads you through the game.
So basically, if you've never played a game like this before, this was like pretty much the first one I ever played, and I have played games similar to it since. You've mentioned Warhammer Quest. We've played that a few times, but we used to actually play this together. And that's the weird thing, because once I had, you know, graduated elementary school, I met Jay in middle school. He had a game too. I used to spend the weekends at his house quite often. We'd spend a lot of time in the basement, hence the name of the show, you know, Back to the Basement. So I saw he had this on his shelf, and after I had read the rules and everything like that so bad, I really just wanted to play with somebody else. And that brings us to the basic concept of the game, which is also its biggest flaw, I believe. And maybe you feel differently, Jay, but I believe this is the biggest flaw of the game. And a lot of games that come out now have fixed that problem. When it says 2 to 5 players, the reason you need 2 to 5 players is because this is an adventure game. There are 4 heroes and 1 evil wizard. I think his name is Zargon. Does that sound right?
I believe.
Zargon.
I have not read that book in a long time.
I believe his name is Zargon, and he's the evil wizard. Now, what this basically means is if you're familiar with Dungeons & Dragons or something like that, one person actually has to run the game, like you were saying, Jay. One person has to tell the story, which basically amounts to a quick blurb before and after.
Reading flavor text.
Right. They have a map in front of them in their book that shows the board, which is kind of cool. It's a basic dungeon board with little rooms. It's flat. He's got a picture of that, and it shows him where all the enemies, the treasures, and the starting point and the ending goal, things like that, are. So he can see all that, but when you start the game, it's basically blank except for the room your heroes start in. So the other player has a choice. You know, he can play all the characters, he can play some of the characters. There's 4 heroes. There's a wizard, a goblin, a barbarian, and what was the other one?
Elf.
The elf, that's right. So this might sound cool, because in this manner, it is competitive, but it's no fun to play it competitive. So what you're looking at here is a situation, and maybe you feel different, but one person has to sit out on all the fun while the other person adventures. Or if it's just, if you have 5 friends, if it's you and 4 of your friends over, and you're playing HeroQuest, 4 people at your party are going to have fun. And I always hated playing Zargon.
See, you know, I didn't mind playing Zargon. I loved having, it's a whole separate book of just secret GM information that you hide behind another big piece of cardboard, which to them looks like the, you know, an awesome wizard over a mountain thing. But on your side, it's got like all these vital monster statistics. But it's like you had all the, you were behind the scenes. And I just loved putting this stuff out and moving all the monsters, because as a hero you got to move your guy, but then as the GM you could be moving like 10 monsters a turn. There's a lot more dice rolling. You have a lot more to do as the game master.
That's true, and maybe that would make it attractive to some people. I think you might be in the minority, but that's actually okay, because we always have needed GMs.
GMs are definitely needed. I've actually...
And certain personalities...
There are too few, from my role-playing experience, at least in our area, there are just too few GMs in the area. Like, I have to be one. I don't generally like to GM, but I'm kind of stuck being one, or I don't get to play anything right now.
So the problem with this game is if you're new to any sort of role-playing adventure experience... This is going to be difficult. Like, let's just say, okay, for instance, so we played this in the basement for the first time. We both already previously played it. Me, just my own kind of imagining playing it because I've read through the rule books and everything like that. What I'm saying is at that point, you have to remember, what if we had just been a couple of kids had paper routes and we went out and with our pocket money and, like, let's go in on buying HeroQuest together and go home and play it all weekend. We're going to open it up. Okay, so... Here's the thing. We got Zargon and we got the heroes. It's just the two of us. Nobody else is going to play. Which one you want to be? Oh, what's Zargon going to do? Zargon's got to read this giant-ass manual, and here's all your shit in a big pile. What's the other guy's got to do? Oh, you guys get to swing swords around and kill monsters and find treasure and save the day. Oh, I don't want to be Zargon.
I think really the only downside to being Zargon was... The flavor text was lengthy. You would have a half a page at a clip to read to the heroes, and it could be a little much.
It didn't even matter to a hill of beans. The writing, I remember, was fairly good for what it was, but it didn't seem to affect the gameplay very much, except for maybe the goal at the end would be slightly different, you know. But yeah, we used to play this all the time, and it was pretty much everything I was hoping it would be. Basically, this game, as an overview, is there are many different quests. There's quite a few default ones, and there's a blank map in the back of the manual.
There are 14 quests in the core game.
Good. 14? For some reason, I thought there were more.
It was 14 in the core. There were 10 in each quest pack, and then you could make your own up on the fly.
Right. And I remember... After a while, I had photocopied the back of the quest book, because they only give you... Here's the thing is, like, if you're a kid and you don't know any better, you're just going to start writing in that, and the next thing you know, it's going
to
be ruined.
Right. I think they actually tell you to photocopy it in the book. An interesting note about that is a few friends in middle school and I were actually playing this, and we developed a travel game just by using the photocopy pages.
Oh, yeah?
The map, which is identical to the board, so you can make your own quest, and they also had a page that had all the symbols on it, so you could cut and paste if you weren't very artistic. You could also take all those symbols and make a miniature version of the board. So all I did was I took, you know, the little printout board, all the little tiny icons of tiles that were only, like, maybe about the size of an eraser, and just laid those out. I think I, like, taped them together so they'd stick up a little bit, and I had those in a box with the dice, and you could take that into school and play at lunch and not have a big setup.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea at all. That's kind of the same thing I did, but with the chessboard. I put it in a Trapper Keeper so I could just unfold it and had it. Interesting, the innovations that we came up with back in the day. So basically, I mean, how is this game played? I know you get the four characters. There's a, you know, a barbarian and an elf and a wizard and a dwarf, and these kind of the archetypes. I know, what was it, the barbarian, he was the strongest one attacking, right?
He got, he could wield, like, bigger weapons.
And then you had the wizard, which got to pick from a pool of four different spells.
Yeah.
He got to pick, what, three? So that was his deal. There were four sets of cards based on elements.
Yeah.
Like water, air, fire, heart.
Yeah, each one had three spells in the set, and, you know, they did things kind of according to their element for the most part. Like, I believe air would give you invisibility and flight, and earth would give you rock skin.
And you could walk through walls.
Yeah.
Cool stuff like that. So the wizard, he would get to pick his spells first. He's the magic user.
Well,
so
the wizard would get first pick.
So he would get
pick. One set of spells. Or one element.
And then elf, the other character who could cast spells, would pick, what, one?
He would then pick one. He was like a minor spellcaster, but he could still actually fight. And then the remaining two sets would go to the wizard.
So the wizard would ended up with three sets, and he would get his pick of his favorite from the first. And the elf would get the rest. Now the elf, we might as well talk about him. He's a little weaker physically.
The elf and the dwarf pretty much had the same stats, I believe. But the dwarf, I think, could wear some of the heavier armor. and give himself like an increase in defense.
Did he start out with a weapon that could attack diagonally from the star? I know the wizard does.
Only the wizard did with his staff, I believe.
So yeah, the wizard starts not only with the three spells, but his staff.
I don't think that's a starting weapon. I think he could buy that, but that was like wizard only, and it was still actually pretty cheap in, you know, game gold. The barbarian could get a sword that would do the same thing, but it was much more expensive. It would be one of those things you get later on.
Right. And then, so the dwarf, I remember his basic thing was he was a fairly decent fighter, and he could disarm traps?
Yeah, he could disarm traps, which was good, because traps hurt.
Happen. Yeah, they happen all the time. That's the four basic characters, and I guess when you start the game, Zargon, whoever's playing Zargon, will be reading the information telling what you have to do. Typically, I think they start out in just one room on the board, and there is a doorway and a staircase. The staircase is like a tile, mm-hmm. you know, it just goes onto the board. And
it's like a picture of a spiral stairs.
And you get these four little hero figures. They're red by default, but you can paint them up, and they just sit on the stairway, and that's it. There's one doorway or two doorways or however many doorways are in that room.
And closed. They're closed doors.
Yeah, it's neat because they're like little cardboard doors. Some of them are like just arches that tend to bend if you don't take care of them because they're flimsy and they're open. And then the other ones just have a brown closed wooden door on it.
And when you go to open the door in-game, you actually replace the closed door with an open door.
Right. And I guess it's to simulate the fact that you can't see what's outside of that room mm-hmm. because walls. Even though the board is just white lines for the walls and you're looking down at tile. Which is really cool. And so you sort of take turns. You roll, what is it, six-sided dice.
You had two sixes for movement and they were just your standard dotted dice.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were special dice for combat, which had symbols on them instead of numbers.
And you could do one move and one action in a turn, but you couldn't break them up. Was that right?
Right. You could move and attack, or attack and then move.
Or move and searching, was that a kind of an action?
Searching was a thing. And I think they actually broke it down where you could search for traps, or search for treasure, or search for secret doors.
I think you're right.
So it was a really in-depth searching system.
And you could have them do it once each person per room.
Right.
I think searching for treasure, was that just the first hero that searched for it? Or did everybody get the search?
I'm not sure. I don't remember. We could get the book out.
It involves effort.
If people are going to play the game, they'll read it anyway.
The basic idea, though, is that you go out through the hallways, you go through the rooms, and the enemies will appear. Zargon is looking at the map, so he knows where they are, whenever there is line of sight. So if you could draw a line from your hero, nothing obstructing his vision, or her vision, I don't want to be accused of being a misogynist on my show. And Zargon will put those down. You go through the rooms. If they were empty, you could search them. For treasures, or you could search for traps, things like that, as your action. But typically, you're just going to be fighting your way to the end. I mean, the aesthetic of this game, it just sets it right up. You mentioned that furniture. When it's arranged on the maps, it actually looks like the way a room would be laid mm-hmm. out. And they're 3D. There's color. You can look at and see there's little rats on the tables, or the alchemy table. There's scales. They're very detailed, and if you take the time to even add more detail to some of the brown plastic with paint, I bet you it'd look even better.
And it really, the thing of it was, when you went into a room and there was furniture, there was like at least a 50% chance that that meant something in-game, and that gives you all the more inspiration. Oh, there's a chest in this room. We have to check this chest.
Which is cool, because sometimes, when you search for treasure, sometimes you just find it laying around, and sometimes you can actually go, there's actually a chest, there's a little chest. Like a little pirate chest piece that just sits there.
Mm-hmm.
I always really like those. They're two hard plastic pieces and like a little piece of cardboard in the middle. It was really convincing. It really drew you into this world. You play this game, you kind of do it in phases. The heroes will get to move, one each. If you're playing all of them or some of them, you just keep track and take turns. If you are Zargon, you then move after the heroes.
And Zargon moves all the monsters and does all the monstery things.
Right. And I know he doesn't have a lot to do in the early portions of the game until the heroes have started kind of exploring. But he will eventually end up moving just about everything on the board. That's the basic flow of the game. The object is different in every quest. Like, I remember the very first intro quest I played so many times has you sort of picking your way through to the middle. Traps will befall you and you'll have to roll dice and things like that. But you have to meet a gargoyle. But along the way, you know, there's a lot of different monsters.
And, you know, that's a great thing about just the design of the rooms on the board. These days, you have a lot of modular stuff, so it's really random. But this was done on one board. It was already set which rooms and walls were there. But the design of the individual dungeon or quest or whatever you'd call it, it had you could run just this labyrinthine circuit around this board going into rooms and out of rooms. And just by the way that they blocked things, because you could block things off with a tile that just looks like brick wall.
And yeah, there's hallways between the rooms, and you could just put a little tile there, like you said.
And there were just so many,
the whole way you played it.
There were so many combinations you could have, and so many different treks just by like the different ways that the rooms were set up and what you had to go through to get to the other point, or what you could go around, or when there were multiple paths. It was really incredible what you could do with just one game board.
Yeah, and the minis are great. Let's talk about the monsters. Let's see what we got here. Wow, you've got these painted, too.
I painted everything.
So you've got a few different types, from what I mean, let's just generalize them. I think the first one is sort of the goblin kin.
Yeah, you got the greens. They're the green ones.
You've got these little goblins. They hold you know, little axes, and they look angry.
Yeah, as they talk like this. And they look small and mischievous.
But then the upgraded version of them, of course, is the orc.
Mm.
A little bit bigger, a lot meatier looking,
definitely,
meaner.
They look mean.
Meaner, bigger.
They got the exposed tusks.
Big weapons. Real husky. So then you have the greens. And then you have the undead.
Well, you even have, don't forget, the femur. This, I was surprised, didn't make the move into any of the other, like, war hammer stuff or anything. But the femur was just, like, this big beast of a green thing. It was like a one-eyed, club-tailed lizard snake monster thing that was supposed to be related to the orcs and goblins, but they never covered that in any different games.
See, I didn't know that. He's got these painted green, and the plastic for the femur monster is a gray, so I'd always just imagine them as a gray skin.
Look, it's green. Look underneath.
Huh.
Yeah, green.
Fair enough. I didn't know.
The gray was for the all the chaos sorcerer. Well, the sorcerer. I guess they called them Chaos Warriors there, too.
And they're all related somehow. Yeah, there's Chaos Warriors, which are kind of like these big evil knights, basically.
Just think of your... It looks like an enchanted suit of armor. Like, suit of armor, no eyes, walking at you.
And then there is a Chaos Sorcerer, which is sometimes used as a boss character, who's basically a Chaos Warrior with a different pose, from what I can tell.
Well, no, I mean, he had, like, robes. He's got a similar helmet to the Chaos Warriors, but it's open so you can see his skull face. And he's got flowing robes, and his hands are outstretched, ready to cast some spells. And there were spells. When you used him, they would be available to Zargon when it came time for the big fight at the end.
So yeah, I guess that covers all of the Goblinkins and the Chaos Warriors. There's undead, there's your typical... I mean, they look cool, but they're mummies and skeletons, basically.
And zombies.
And there are, like, ghouls, I think they were, weren't they? Yeah, the ghouls.
Well, zombies. They were zombies.
I think they're ghouls.
They call them zombies.
Okay. Well, they're zombies. Either way, they eat flesh, and they have these big butcher knives.
And then you had the big bad guy that would come out once in a while. They called him a gargoyle. Later on, we would actually find out in the Warhammer universe, which this is basically the prototype of, these were actually, like, a servant of one of the Chaos Gods. They were bloodthirsters. But you've got basically this, it looks like a giant stone gargoyle.
And this piece
wings
is
coming
big.
Out, giant sword and a whip, a huge snarl. This was actually like a three-piece miniature. Like all the other minis were just, it was one piece. It just came like that. You clip it off the sprue, you're good to go. This guy was three separate pieces. He was so big.
The wings come off. You had to put the wings on and the head would pop on. It was just a torso other than that. Very, very cool minis, especially for the price of this game. So that's your monsters. Now, here's the cool thing. I was like, I thought that fighting them was very easy to learn and very kind of innovative. Depending on your weapon that you're using, you have the ability to roll dice. And these aren't regular dice. These are six-sided dice, but they have the skulls on the one side. Or how many sides do you think? It's probably... What do you think the ratio is?
There were three skulls, two heroic shields, and one monster shield.
And when you fought, basically it was a roll-off. You would roll, let's just say, for instance, the barbarian with his broadsword would have, what, three?
Yeah, two or three.
By default. He would have three, so he would roll those dice against the monster. Mm-hmm. Which you'd have to be next to a monster, you know, able to swing at it in order to do this. And however many skulls appeared after the roll would count as hits. Which case the monster, which, depending on the monster, would have different amounts of dice to roll. Mm-hmm. It could be 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever. They would have to roll the black shields, which would negate one of those skulls. And then whatever the net, so if you rolled three skulls and they rolled two black shields, they blocked two, but you still did one. And if the monster would take 1, 2, 3, or 4 damage, whatever you're fighting, it would just die. And that would be that.
And you count down the damage you have. It was really innovative. The flip side of your blocked wall tile, the standard brick tile, was actually like a skull symbol.
That's right. I forgot about that. Because I had to flip them all over to use them as walls.
So as your monsters took damage, you would just stack these tiles up until they get to their max.
It was complex enough that it had some meat to it for people like me that were new to this kind of thing. But it was simple enough that people could understand it. So you and the four adventurers would go through, and you would find money. You could spend it between quests at this mm-hmm. little shop in the manual, which didn't really have a whole lot in it.
There were about 6 or 8 things. I mean, you could get a healing potion, upgrade your armor a couple of times until you got the best gear you can get in the game.
Yeah, it seemed like it could have definitely used more, but I think successive games after this, it definitely improved it.
They added a few items in the expansion shops, different potions and such.
There was a lot of expansions of this game. I didn't even find out until much, much later.
Yeah, well, I got the first two, Kellar's Keep and The Return of the Witch Lord. I sent out for the second two, which were supposed to... There was a Barbarian quest pack and an Elf quest pack, which I believe focused on, like, the beginning of those characters. But unfortunately, I got a letter back about 2 weeks later saying they were out of them, and I could never get them because...
I think they were limited run.
Which, they didn't really sell them much in the U.S. after that.
You know what's strange is Kellar's Keep and Return of the Witch Lord, which were the two ones that I had seen that, you know, we've got the boxes sitting right here, also with some amazing box art. They were released in Australia and Europe before they came out here. We didn't get them until 1991, and they got them, I believe, the end of 1989, mm-hmm. beginning of 1990.
And you wouldn't see these in shops. You had to pretty much special order them out of the little tiny catalog slip in the main game.
Mm-hmm. So basically, I mean, in a nutshell, these basically just added some more quests, more monsters, more items. Mm-hmm. And the figures, I think getting the extra figures would have been worth it because... I know Kellar's Keep came with more goblins and femurs.
Kellar's Keep pretty much doubled your green count, and Return of the Witchlord doubled the undead. The real great thing about it was they added new tiles, and some of them overlaid whole rooms and made these awesome, just, here's a completely different room we haven't seen yet. Like, here's a rocky crevice that we must try not to fall off of on our way out of the dungeon, or here's an even bigger throne room with... just bigger, badder art, and, you know, it's like...
Here's... Which definitely helps when you're playing this game mm-hmm. a lot, and you've played through a lot of the quests, you start to look at this stone dungeon, and you're just like, I'm done with seeing this. So even just another tile on top of it would help keep the game a little bit more fresh. So...
They even had a few innovative tiles, like there were some room overlay tiles. One was a circular room, and you would go into this circled room, and you would randomly come out a different side, because that was what was spinning, your character would become disoriented and not know where he was going.
So that's cool. Yeah, that's, so basically, it's a PhD, it's piled higher and deeper of everything that you loved about mm-hmm. HeroQuest. The ones you were talking about here were the Frozen Horror, which was the Barbarian quest pack. And these were kind of like solo, like based on a particular character, weren't mm-hmm. they? Now, the Barbarian one was very kind of snow-themed. It added, like, ice jetties, and I remember polar bears and a new boss character.
Yeah, see, that, I looked these up later, and the thing I liked most about this is once you get to those quest packs, you have completely new minis to play with. I actually went back and printed out a lot of the... someone had up the image files of the tiles, so I have all the tiles to those. Someday I'll actually find some minis that I can use for the new ones, and we can actually run those at some point.
That would be nice. But see, now here's the thing, is Europe got, let's see, 1, 2, 3 expansions. Well, 2 expansions and kind of another thing. In 1990, the Adventure Design Kit came out in Europe. Now this, from what I understand, and it was hard to find a lot of information on it, it came with a lot of just different tools, like labels that you could put down, a pad with quest sheets, a new larger character sheets. So it was sort of like the pro edition, like if you've finished everything else and you want to create your own quest, it came with some extra little minis, I think, too. Just a lot of stuff to really help you kick it up. And then they had two that came out. Let me see. One in 1990 was Against the Ogre Horde.
Mm-hmm.
Basically added ogres as a monster class and some more quests and some of the same stuff that the other expansions had. And finally, in 1991, the Wizards of Morcar, also only in Europe and in Australia territories. Basically the Evil Wizard expansion pack, from what I can see. So yeah, there's a lot to play with just the base HeroQuest. So that's pretty much it about HeroQuest. There's a lot more to it. The rules of it are pretty in-depth. If you've never played an adventure board game before, you're going to have to read up on it. If you have played them, then this is going to be child's play, because they've built upon this formula quite a few times in the decades that have followed. I don't know if you know anything about these, Jay. Advanced HeroQuest? I've never seen that one.
I have read about it a little bit. From what I remember, I think the board was the same, the minis were the same. Everything was the same, but there were more in-depth rules. I think they added to the character sheet, and they might have added a little bit to the magic.
Did they add anything to the shop? Because it would have been nice to have more to spend your treasures on.
I don't remember.
That was the biggest bummer for me, was like I was saying, there's so little to spend your money on. It was like...
Yeah, like, buy a better sword, buy a piece of armor. Hey, you've bought everything. Buy some healing potions.
So, I would hope that Advanced HeroQuest... I actually would maybe want to track this down. It's probably not as expensive now as the original. Well, it's probably produced in much less quality,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's probably a lot harder to find. But, you know, if they use a lot of the same pieces, it's one of those things where you're better off, you know, see if you can find a place that has PDFs of the old game that you can look off for reference or print out.
Yeah, fair enough. You could just print out the the rules for it. I would like to play that. But really, I mean, and this is something I've played with Jay here, you know, in recent times that I missed out on back in the day. I'd heard about it. I knew it existed. Warhammer Quest. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, there was a little slip that came in HeroQuest. It was a little catalog, look at our other games, and it mentioned Warhammer Quest in there, because it was a Games Workshop slip, because right. Apparently this was like a cooperative effort. So I'm assuming that the people from Games Workshop must have sold this concept to Milton Bradley for some startup capital. We could look it up, but I didn't.
But, either.
Yeah, there's a little
look
slip.
Look that up and let us know.
Play Warhammer Quest, showed you a little ad for it. And since this was, of course, this was 91, this was pre-internet, this was pre-driving for us, pre-anything, I looked all over for this game locally, like, over and over, and I was like, where's Warhammer Quest? Where does it come? And apparently it wasn't produced yet when it was out in the catalog slip, so I finally
tried... Because 80s.
I didn't even know anything about Warhammer Quest until about 3 or 4 years later, when a local comic convention came to town, and they had board games set up, and somebody was playing Warhammer 40,000, which is futuristic, like, take your fantasy races and put them in the future and make them fight with laser
Warhammer
guns.
40K?
Well, originally I believe it was 40,000 before it got shortened and trendy, but yeah, I played a round of that as a demo, and that was fun, and it wasn't until, like, I think 98, that I actually found Warhammer Quest. I'm not sure if it was because it was delayed coming out or if it just took me that long to find a game
shop. We were graduating
shop.
High school.
I was already working, which was good because that game was like $85 retail. But Warhammer Quest was the same concept, almost all the same monsters. Even they added a few, but all your orcs and goblins were still in there. They were updated. They had a lot more personality. They added Minotaur and Skaven, which were rat people, and they had the typical giant rats, giant bats, and giant spiders that you find in almost every dungeon anywhere anymore. But Warhammer Quest, you had the same four heroes to start. They had expansions for everything, so you could get different heroes later. But you had the same four heroes from HeroQuest, and now instead of one board, it was a modular room and hallway sections that were connected by the doorways, which were all open now, but it was this big 2-space-wide stone doorway with a little clip in the bottom to hook the tile pieces
together.
So you
need to have a little bit more room, I would think.
Yeah, yeah, it got a little roomy. With HeroQuest, you had exactly this much room. You knew where to put everything at the start, and you were good to go. But Warhammer Quest, just they expanded things. They made it a little more intricate.
More so than Advanced HeroQuest, I would even assume.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they had... You had like a hit number to get. Everything went back to numbered dice. It got a little more complicated. It was a little more in-depth, a little more involved. Your characters could do different things, which was really refreshing. And then they actually had a role-play section of the game, which was after you beat the bad guy in the dungeon and achieve your objective, you would actually roll on charts to see what happens on your way back to town, which could also often be like way more dangerous and deadly than what happened in town, or what happened in the dungeon. And once you get through that, you go to town, which if you have enough money, you can buy training, or you can buy stuff from shops, right? Instead of just having the shop at the end of the dungeon with four items, you actually had like an in-depth city or town you could go to and see if they had this whole list of items available.
So you could play this sort of like more of a campaign than individual sessions.
Right, and you could also get into trouble in town if you're hanging out at the tavern, random things happen. Some of them could like benefit you as a character, like in your next quest, some of them would hinder you.
Yeah, I remember really liking it. I could see why you played this version so much back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry I wasn't part of those groups, because I had a lot of fun. We couldn't decide, you know, going back to play these games again, whether we were going to play HeroQuest or Warhammer Quest. And I'd always wanted to try it, but I'm like, I don't know if I want to learn more rules. But it's really, if you know how to play HeroQuest, Warhammer Quest is very accessible. Mm-hmm. If you can just learn a little bit more on top of it, like a little bit more concepts, I think it's fun. I kind of prefer the ease of use of the single board. But you do get a little bit more variety when you use
the
modular
tiles. They led to a lot more randomness in the dungeon, but at the same time, that could also be, let's go down 10 hallways and then find the room with the bad guy, and it'd just be completely uneventful.
The biggest, I think, innovation in, I think that game probably was one of the early ones, and a lot of adventure board games that have come since from other companies have involved is, it turned out it was pretty easy to write scripted rules for the enemy behaviors.
Yeah, that was a great thing. Enemies had their own AI, and it would tell you right off the bat, like, this is what they're going to do. That way you know how to assign which enemies to which players. Which, interesting thing, the thing that made it great was, since everything was random and modular, there was no longer a quest book for a GM to sit behind. There were options for that if you wanted a scripted quest. But if, like we said before, nobody wanted to be the GM, everybody wanted to be a hero, then you just mix up your deck of cards, which will tell you which pieces to draw and which monsters to throw at, and you go at it, and you're all heroes, and when the card comes up, you know what to do.
And that's what a big draw of that in games. Other games like this, they're coming out nowadays. There's a whole line of Dungeons & Dragons games. Mm-hmm. You know, the Cthulhu Lovecraftian games like Arkham Horror and Elder Sign and Eldritch Horror. A lot of games nowadays are coming like that, because who doesn't want to go over to game night with their friends and everybody sit down and be the heroes together, or be the big-ass losers together? Because in these games, that's the thing. In all of these games, you can all die. You can all fucking die. You and your friends are dead.
Yep.
Game over. Like, that's it.
Which really puts a hindrance on the campaign mode sometimes. Oh, I got my guy to level 3 after a month of playing this game, and he just fell into a fiery chasm to his death.
Yeah.
Roll up a new one.
That's the way it goes, or you could fudge it like we all did.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, so-and-so had a... I forgot to draw that card for that healing potion from the last time I played. I know I had one, and I just forgot to take it this time. He drinks it on the way down, we'll just say that. And so you can. Nobody wants to lose like that, but you do want to have the threat of it, I think. And the Warhammer Quest was a little bit harder, I thought, than Hero Quest. But Hero Quest wasn't a slouch. It was pretty difficult sometimes, because granted, it was easier for you to defend attacks, because you had one more of the white shields to defend an attack when the monsters attacked you than Black Shields, but you get beat up pretty good if you didn't.
Also, Hero Quest, until you hit the shop a lot, the healing was very limited.
Mm-hmm. You could find healing potions and stuff like that, too. So Warhammer Quest added a lot of stuff, so it was a little harder, but it added a little bit more strategy. The skills were a little bit more in depth, so you could think about it and stay alive. So, if I imagine it's probably easier to start with HeroQuest
and then work your way up,
but that's going to be difficult nowadays. I imagine Warhammer Quest is still in production.
Warhammer Quest actually went out for the longest time, and I believe Games Workshop actually, from what I hear, lost their files to Warhammer Quest. But they just put out a new one. I believe it's called the Silver Tower. It's similar to the old Warhammer Quest, but from what I've read, the one thing it's lacking is the entire town roleplay section. What it is it's basically Warhammer Quest being Hero Quest, in that you are in a tower that just keeps going on, and you go through one level and fight the bad boss, and then go through another level and fight the next boss, and it pretty much comes back to Hero Quest, where you don't have the town section, you don't have the role play, you just have the action.
That sounds cool, too. I'd like to try that. Hero Quest, it wasn't just a game series, or a spiritual forefather to what we know as modern adventure board gaming. It happened to have three novels. Did you ever see any of these anywhere? Because I've never seen these anywhere.
No, I did not know about those.
I didn't either. One was called The Fellowship of the Four, which I can only imagine is about the four
barbarian,
heroes.
Dwarf, elf, and wizard.
The Screaming Spectre and The Tyrant's Tomb. I kind of think of those old D&D Dragonlance novels like R.A. Salvatore used to write, but worse. Way, way, way worse. Or
Not necessarily worse, just because they're from a more obscure system.
I can't imagine they had the same kind of punch as some of those. I mean, I know, let's put it this way. Those old D&D novels were a mixed bag. Sometimes the author was good, sometimes he was bad. Sometimes it was R.A. Salvatore, which is the only ones I think are really worth reading. That's a whole nother show. You know what? I wonder if they're as bad as those. I don't know if you ever saw those old Nintendo game novelizations. They had one for Castlevania. They had one for Blaster Master for some reason. I remember reading those, and they were some of the worst literature. I wouldn't even call them literature. Some of the worst tripe ever, but I read them all the way through. And that wasn't all. Speaking of video games, there were two games on the PC. There was the adaptation, which was a straight port of all the adventures in the base game system, HeroQuest. And then there was a HeroQuest 2, which was, I don't know if it had the expansions or if it was all original content. It might have been all original. I'd never really played either one of them. But they also, there was a prototype for the NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System, which I had a ROM of, and I did play. And from what I saw, it was exactly a straight port of the original board game.
Which makes it hard, because when you're sitting around with your friends, there will be, you know, you can have a series of bad dice rolls and somebody will just fudge it and it'll be like, oh, that didn't happen. But no, this computer, you know, it's straight up, this is the die roll, this is what happens, this is you die. It's kind of like if you were playing with your friends, but the GM was a dick. That's what it's like playing the computer Sims.
I wished I would have had this for the NES back in the day, because then I would have been able to play it at my house alone. I realize there's ways you could easily, if you think about it enough, you could modify this to make it kind of a single-player experience.
You know, what I always did was I just kind of removed myself mentally from the GM situation during the player's turn and tried not to think about, oh, they're going to go for the objective because it's over here. Granted, there's some give and take, and obviously it gets easier because you know where the traps are, but you still kind of just lead yourself through an adventure like that. It sounds really pathetic, but it is possible.
It's like, one time I was playing Battleship with Hi-Ho the Cherry-O.
This is how I masturbate.
So yeah, the NES game was cool. So that was pretty much the extent of HeroQuest. I wish they would have finished the Nintendo game so I could play alone. You know what? I almost forgot to mention, since then, I've actually found several open source programs. You can search for this kind of stuff on SourceForge. Still a thing. I remember when I was in college, it was where a lot of people will post their what they're working on, the code for it, and it'll be out there, so you could download it yourself and work on it and collaborate. There was a couple of good ones, like just clicky mice, like just top down, very basic icons that you could easily play. They went really fast. It's a time that will never come again, I fear. So that's HeroQuest. You want to play a game?
Sure.
Let's
roll
play.
The dice.
What do you guys think happened? One of the players Robbie played with got carried away and killed him.
Well, that's kind of far out.
Mazes and Monsters is a far out game. Swords, poison, spells, battles, maiming, killing.
Hey, it's all imagination.
Is it? I'll be talking to you.
Hey, if you liked HeroQuest, if you tried it out, or if you're interested, but you don't want to go back and spend 200 eBay dollars on it, there's a lot of new games out that I could recommend that are very similar gameplay. Warhammer Quest, of course, has a new version out, the Silver Tower. We talked about that. There's also a few interesting ones. Shadows of Brimstone is the same feel as Warhammer Quest, a lot of the same mechanics, but it is set in a Western Lovecraftian world where there is stone that is radioactive, for better terms. It causes mutations and monsters come out, and there's tentacles and all kinds of really weird monsters in the caves. That's a great one. If you want to go a different route, there's a great family-friendly game called Mice and Mystics. It is very much, it's very similar to the original HeroQuest, but you are mice. You are like people turned into mice magically that have to trek through the big rooms of a castle, even bigger now that you're mice, and watch out for evil rats and roaches and spiders. And that is a very story-oriented game. It's a little cuter, but it's very story-driven. It's like a series of specific events. And it's a very nice flow. We've been playing that a lot. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of the same vein as HeroQuest and Warhammer Quest were. It's just a lot of great adventuring. So, yeah, 10 out of 10. But you don't have to take my word for it.
Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to our very first episode of Back to the Basement about HeroQuest. Check us out on Facebook, subscribe to us on iTunes, and we will see you next time in the basement.